So, Don McIntosh, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me.
Don, you and I go way back, and I think you remember our relationship much better than me. Introduce yourself.
I mainly remember your appearance. You were always at Portland State when I was a student there. I was a radical activist, I guess you might say, and an alternative journalist. And so you sort of recruited me into the Portland Alliance, which was, for those who don't know about it, it was a monthly community, sort of a radical community or left community newspaper that I then ended up becoming editor of, and you were on the board. So, yeah, we had years of fun and fruitful collaboration.
Yeah, that's a terrific condensed version. I think I learned about you, though, from some newspaper clipping of organizing in Vancouver around anti-war work, and your name was mentioned. So I don't think we met at Portland State. I think we met before that when the Alliance contacted you. At Portland State, though, it sort of deepened.
I stand corrected. You have a better memory than I. I was very active in the anti-war coalition. This is the anti-first Gulf War. It was called COSMIME, Coalition Against U.S. Military Intervention in the Middle East. A big name, but I was very active in that. And so I was doing some writing, and I did write something for the Alliance at that time.
Right, and then you sort of stayed in touch, and at some point you achieved that enormous honor and responsibility of being editor for 70, 80 hours a week to put out the Alliance and to raise all the money to keep it going.
It was a great job.
It was a great job, and it also, in some ways, prepared you for your current job, and you are now...
If you can believe it, for 19 years I've now worked at the Northwest Labor Press, which is an unusual kind of newspaper. It's a newspaper that goes out to about 50,000 union members in Oregon and Southwest Washington, and it basically tells labor's story. It talks about class issues, class conflict, you know, labor union politics, and that all that that entails.
You've been doing it for 19 years.
Can you believe it?
No. You don't even look that old now. Preserve yourself. Don, we talked recently, just a sort of cocktail party chat. And you remarked on how naive you were, you didn't use that term, but that at the beginning of your tenure at the Northwest Labor Press, you saw yourself as quite critical of labor, actually. I'm supportive in a lot of ways, but wondering about the way they operated. And now, after 19 years, you're far more sympathetic, actually, with the dilemmas they face and how they're dealing with them. Why don't you explain that?
Sure. Well, I think I would put it a little bit differently. I mean, I think like a lot of sort of college-educated, left-wing people, I had this particular narrative about what labor was in the glory days of the 30s and the radicals and this and that. I would say there's this perspective that's really typified by a magazine like Labor Notes, where the idea is that there are these labor bureaucrats in positions of power and that they're too cautious and too conservative and lack vision and so forth, and somehow they're the problem, and that if you would just sort of run insurgent campaigns and get active and take over these unions, why, you could usher in a new glory day of unionism. I think over time I came to understand people from a variety of perspectives who were in leadership positions as human beings. And I also saw examples when you'd have insurgent campaigns would come in and they would win election in these unions. And honestly, although I was certainly sympathetic to their points of view, I don't think you can point to their record as being notably more successful in terms of organizing or getting success for the members in terms of collective bargaining. I just think that the issues are much bigger than, like, you know, there's a guy who needs to be replaced or something like that. We have to understand these are representative, actually democratic institutions. And so, you know, to that extent, they're only as good as their members. And I think that's the larger, longer-term crisis that we're looking at.
I think, though, you don't give Labor Notes credit. I believe they see the issues as structural as well, that labor is in deep trouble for so many reasons and for the amount of power that corporations have accumulated now, greater than any time in history. They can move anywhere. They can frighten any country even with desolation and economic collapse if they, in fact, disinvest. They really are the gods that run the world in some ways, like the ancient gods. You have to propitiate them and give sacrifices to them in the form, of course, of subsidies of many kinds and immunity from prosecution for crimes, among other favors that they demand. So it's really hard for labor. There's no question. I think Labor Notes, though, recognizes that and recognizes that leadership can only do so much. But I think Labor Notes really is pushing for supporting the radicals at the base. And there's radicalism at the base in almost all unions, and some of them very, very strong caucuses that challenge. And it's that radicalism at the base that they're trying to build. It's not just a replacement of people at the top, and it's not just the union bureaucracy is evil. And the people on top, though, let's not call them labor bureaucrats, labor officials and people in those positions have extraordinarily hard jobs now with pulls from every direction and, in fact, threats to their very existence. Even the public unions, of course, through privatization. There are threats actually to the existence of labor unions, all of them in one form or another. This is Cable Radio, Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Don McIntosh, basically thinking about what a labor union can do and what they are doing. We began, to some extent, with the critique. I think the critique, though, has some merit, that leadership could actually choose a path that activates members more, that teaches, that educates them, that activates more, that revives steward systems.
There's no question that I think in individual cases in local unions, you can see someone come in who's got a lot of fire in the belly, and I have seen unions get revitalized. No question about that. But I just think, you know, we need to remember that this union movement, this institution of unions and collective bargaining and so forth, this was the product of a popular mass movement. And that mass movement is just not really with us today. We might like to see it again, and I hope that it will come back. A new movement will arise of working people demanding effectively and obtaining for themselves, you know, something more like a fair result of the income that they generate. That would be a basic.
And power and dignity. It seems to me it's not just a matter of income, which is,
in fact,
a problem the unions have. They got lured into business unionism where the bosses made all the decisions. That's okay with us as long as you pay us okay and give us decent benefits and allow us to lead lives independent of work that are rich, not rich work lives.
But it's true with that. Sometimes it's undervalued, just the basic, like the human dignity. There's a real distinction, I think, in a lot of union jobs. For one thing, just basic things like the idea that you pay everyone the same or that promotions and perks and so forth come with seniority, what that does is it removes the discretion from the managers to pick favorites. And that means that you don't have to kiss the butt of the manager. You don't have to do all that. You can have solidarity with your fellow workers. And that's something that people don't think of.
Firing for cause. And not because some supervisor decides that you just aren't kissing his ass with the same passion as other workers.
That's right. People say all the time unions protect bad workers. That's not true. Unions protect all workers. It's basically the due process rights that you have the right to representation. You have the right to defense. Just like if you're accused of a crime in the criminal courts, you have the right to a defense. The same in a union workplace. You have a coworker who's called a steward who's going to stand in there and take notes and make sure you're not being unjustly treated. You can still be disciplined. You can still be fired when you break the rules. They just have to follow the process in a union workplace.
And you have appeal process. And your appeal processes can go a long way. And there are union lawyers and good unions who will fight like hell to make sure that, in fact, those processes are fair. It seems to me you're absolutely right. There's so much to be said for strong union protections and the way they then protect not people's livelihoods as well and give them room to, in fact, be independent and insist on their rights. Insisting on rights in a non-union shop can be very dangerous.
Yeah, it's liable to get you fired, actually.
Yes, and indeed.
Illegally, but without really consequences.
Yeah, well, sometimes illegally and sometimes legally. The First Amendment does not apply to companies.
Yes, but the National Labor Relations Act does, and it says you can't fire someone for just collective action or for speaking their mind, this sort of thing.
But they can't fire you because you're a leftist and spend a lot of time talking to other people about it. They can't fire you because they don't like your politics. It's legal to fire people because you just don't think they get along with others because their politics are disruptive.
I want to throw something in there just because I think, you know, so few people are actually familiar with the union world. I think that the figures are like under 11% of the workforce now is union represented. But sometimes people will make these sweeping generalizations about unions and what they are and so forth. I think it's important to remember that unions are not a monolith. Organized labor is no more a monolith than organized religion. You can't make generalizations about Catholics and Protestants and evangelicals and Quakers and so forth that are going to fit. You've got your public sector unions that operate in one model. You have just sort of the traditional unions most people are thinking about, like the sort of the factory that all the workers are unionized and so forth. But you've also got the building trades, which I think actually have a very interesting model where they do collaborate with their employers in competing against the non-union, unscrupulous construction employers. They actually secure for their members a very enviable standard of living with benefits and wages. They run hiring halls where they provide the labor. They run the training facilities where they get sometimes 4 or 5 years of training for these specialized skills. I think that it's a successful model that we sometimes ignore when we talk about labor.
Yeah. Although the building trades also unite behind the employers, often in wanting to build oil terminals like in Vancouver, or PGE workers who are now, though changing to some extent, where they unite behind the utilities to stop the growth of renewable energy, or and certainly of local renewable energy.
I have not seen, if you're thinking of IBEW, I have not seen them. In fact, they're very for renewable energy. It's just that in some cases, the building trades unions are also for any kind of project, including fossil fuel projects, because it puts their members to work. And to be fair, I don't know if you drove here today, but I mean, that required fossil fuels. There is still a need for fossil fuel infrastructure, even though we know the planet needs to, as quickly as possible, convert to renewables.
That's a whole nother story, where you put your political muscle and behind what, and to what extent you educate people. You're absolutely right. Unions vary enormously. Some are actually radically democratic. They're not that strong in Oregon, but some of the East Coast unions still retain the mark of democracy of the early union movement states, like the UE, for example, which still represents people in many areas. Or the typesetters. There's many unions that retain radicalism. And lots of unions have steward systems that are strong and are trying to build them up. There's no question that unions are vary enormously. There are signs of change, it seems to me, in the whole labor movement and in the recognizing the necessity of activating their workers, and you've reported on some of them. Let's talk, for example, about the teachers and the nurses. They're so interesting in the way they are now presenting their goals and ideals.
Well, there's a number of cases like this where you find a true community of interest between these unionized workers and the people that they serve. So, for example, the teachers, you know, they really want the right to bargain over class size. And that's something that, as a parent of a public school student, that matters to me very much. They want smaller classes, so do I. And so we're on the same side, and we ought to figure out a way to ally politically and so forth. Same is true of nurses. They want to be able to provide the high quality of care that is why they entered the profession. And that means that, you know, they need to be able to have time to see patients. They can't be given so many patients that they're rushing through all day. So I think those are some examples. But honestly, even for those that are narrowly concerned with their own wages and benefits, I want to point out that to the extent that any union worker obtains a decent living through collective bargaining, which is harder and harder, but to the extent that that happens, that benefits the entire working class. Any program, in fact, that allows people to survive is a program that's preventing the sort of ruinous competition that drives down wages of desperate people. I think even people who might look sometimes to, you know, union wages and benefits or enviously need to remember that that's actually setting a standard within the labor market that does actually lift all boats to an extent.
Yeah, and let me point out that the community of interest is very wide, not just in teachers and nurses and many of the service professions, but in terms of manufacturing and environmental protection. Carpenters who are unionized can tell their boss, this doesn't meet the code. The code is important to meet because of earthquakes and many other things. You're shorting the people, and you can't do that. A union carpenter or the union can say, look, George, this is a, you can't build in this way, and it's very dangerous for all of us. A non-union carpenter cannot do that. They're going to get fired right away, and they have no protection. It seems to me the unions, in fact, as it is with the teachers, I don't know if you remember Diane Ravitch, and she disliked unions until she began seeing that the people who were protecting quality in schools and decent educations for poor kids were the unions, not the charter school billionaires who set up these few model schools with lots of money that looked pretty good. But in fact, for poor people, you put in a voucher system when you get it is the worst of the nursing home system, really terrible places for poor people. And it seems to me what Ravitch, to her great credit, pointed out was in looking at the whole system and how it was changing, it's the unions that actually were standing for quality schools. Now, they had their problems, of course, in terms of the way teachers transferred. There's all these problems in making sure you retain a good faculty. And the way principals are hired often by the school board, who are disciplinarians rather than teaching leaders, there are all kinds of problems. But it was unions that she discovered were the one group that was really fighting for decent schools, and not the boy billionaires who were supporting charters that was going to destroy America's great strength, which is a good public school system.
No, it's true. The teachers' unions in particular have been victims of very great slanders, I think. And I think, first and foremost, the idea that somehow these measurable results can be given credit or blame from the teachers who are in these schools. So we don't do that when it comes to crime, say, for example. We don't say in wealthy Lake Oswego, there's low crime, so the police must be doing a really good job. Let's give them merit bonuses. Whereas maybe the Portland police, you know, there's a lot of crime here, and so they're failing. We've got a failing police system, and they need to be all fired and have to reapply for their jobs. We don't say that because it would be absurd, and yet we're saying the exact same thing when it comes to something like education, where we know the income and education of the parents has every correlation with the result in the schools.
This is KBOO Radio, Bill Resnick here, talking to Don McIntosh, where he's the senior reporter for
Senior staff reporter or something like that. I just write articles.
You write a lot of articles for the Northwest Labor Press. Twice a month they come out with 70,000 subscribers.
And check us out online also, nwlaborpress.org. You can put your email in, get the thing for free, find out what labor's doing, and get educated about this.
They also have a good search system, so you can find articles for your union over the years, in fact. So, Don, let's conclude with activating workers, giving people an opportunity to learn union history, and getting them involved so that labor becomes what it once was for many people. You know, the labor cathedral in cities, they were called labor cathedrals.
Labor temples.
It seems to me that people need a home for the heart. And if you don't get a home for the heart and solidarity around the workplace and those issues and solidarity with your comrades at work and the rest of the community, you find other forms of solidarity, like with football teams or something like that. You put your heart in something else or in absurd ideas about serving the deity. There are all kinds of ways that people become passionate and channel their really solidaristic and sort of loving impulses into ways that really don't challenge the powers that be. And labor is very different in that sense, and it once was. The labor temples were really labor temples in many ways. And labor had a sense of itself as being the people who have to inherit the world. That's most of us. We all labor and for one another. How do we reactivate that? It seems to me developing that sense again is really important, and for labor journalists, incidentally.
Well, that's a trillion-dollar question I think people have been asking for decades, you know, how to revitalize this. I think you're onto something in terms of labor as being an institution that values tradition, that does have a history, which I think for me anyway, very, very interesting history. I would actually be more excited about young people, working people, making their own new labor history than learning the old labor history, which is not to say they shouldn't, but we need that right now. Solidarity, I think, is a value that's learned by experience. Solidarity is something that you get when you work with your fellow workers to win something, and that may mean a strike. I think one of the things that is outside of our collective memory now is what it's like to strike and to strike effectively and to win. And we're going to have to relearn that lesson because there's only so many weapons in the arsenal of working people. You know, we don't call the shots. We don't own the enterprises. We can get activated politically, and I think that's extremely important. But in the workplace, I think that's necessary. We have to be organized. We have to relearn what it means to organize and to work with each other and to fight and to win. Just yesterday, I was interviewing a retired Freightliner employee who remembered this solidarity strike in late 1970s. And she said there were people, this was part of the culture, people who crossed the picket lines, they didn't get talked to by their coworkers for decades after that. But the depth of feeling that it takes to produce that kind of a culture, it's not something you can invent from a union office. It has to come from a renewal of struggle of working people who get organized and learn solidarity.
There's no doubt
in that way.
And there will be a renewal of struggle because capitalism is, in fact, undermining the basis of life and changing the economy in ways that we've never seen, the inequalities of income and the amount of want and particularly the insecurity in people. There's going to be, it seems to me, it's a very challenging and tumultuous future, and there will be struggle. I think, though, that struggle has to be informed, though, with people's knowledge of history, what they've learned from it, a sense of solidarity. Some of those great old songs are really alive.
It's true. I think it was really notable, for example, with the New Seasons Workers United, when they went into the CEO's office and presented their demands at a certain point, they started singing Solidarity Forever, that labor anthem about when the union's inspiration through the workers' blood sort of run. It's archaic language, and yet I think it filled them with a kind of a hope and you know, lifted their spirits. I think there's something to that.
And the great anthem, Solidarity Forever. in our hands is grace to power greater than their hearted gold.
We can sing it on the way out.
And far more important, it seems to me, it is ours not to slave in. They're talking about the world.
But to master
and to own. But to master and to own. Now, we need somewhat different words about that. But to collectively, in fact, work and manage for the benefit of all of us. But that's what Solidarity Forever, and that's a wonderful song, and it's wonderful that they're doing it, and wonderful that they, in fact, recovered all of those great old verses that sometimes they're not sung in union meetings, unfortunately, and the leadership could do the great old verses and not the sort of mild ones. Don, it was great talking to you. Thanks,
Bill. It was a pleasure to be on.
And thank you, Don.